life on the road. It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
bees, fights, canceled flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette, drunks in the front, making out through your set,
and
middle acts doing blow, more missing merch,
and
drive the rental car past another mega church,
and
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone, one big Law and Order marathon.
Hey guys, Murray Valeriano, Road Stories Podcast here. We're going to... It's a fun show today.
Sure.
John DiResta drank a lot of coffee before he came on. We hit the ground running. So I'm just going to introduce the show now.
Yeah.
Ahead of time. My guests today are going to be John DiResta and Risky Betts. And buckle in. Because John doesn't stop. And I love it. Before we record, on the whim, I was at the gas station. And I'm like, oh, let me tweet out and see if anybody has any questions, because this is my first time back since my heart surgery. And I didn't get to it because, as you'll see, it was a crazy show. So I tweeted out any questions, and so they came in. So I figured I'd answer them real quick before Kira's podcast here. First of all, they mostly came in on Facebook, not Twitter, but on Twitter... Matt Slayer just said, congratulations, welcome back. It's not a question, Matt. J.J. White said, yeah, holy shit. J.J. White had a hilarious comic.
Yep.
Over at, he's writing on, what's his face's, Jim Jefferies show.
Oh, yeah.
Because he tours with Jim Jefferies.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, holy shit, how are you, man? And I'm like, I'm doing good. My heart's better. I'm not coughing and wheezing like I did for the last month and a half of this show.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything's good. They're happy with my heart. I was cleared to drive yesterday.
Awesome.
Cleared to do sets. So I'll be doing stupid me. Got a headlining gig my first day back, which was really idiot of me. So I'll be hitting open mics.
I'm not going to lie. When you said cleared to do sets, I heard cleared to do sex.
Oh, cleared to do sex.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, that too. Cleared to do sex. That's a weird conversation you have to have with your cardiologist.
Yeah, yeah.
Because
yeah.
My cardiologist is kind of cute.
Ah.
And I don't like...
What's his name?
Hey-o, Aaron, everybody. I don't like medical terms for your sex organs.
Yeah, yeah, no.
I don't like the word penis.
Grosser.
Yeah, it is,
it's
right?
It's way grosser.
Right? I mean, there's probably 10 gross things for the woman's anatomy, but I'd rather say anything but those. So it's weird saying, in front of this... You know, and I'm like, can I whack? Forget it. Like, I can't have that. I'm like, I can't. And my wife's there. It's a whole thing. Wow, that took a weird turn for J.J. Whitehead's question. But yeah, I'm doing good. So, and then I'm going to be able to go. I'll be able to get in the pool.
Oh, nice.
Soon by probably by it's by 4th of July, so I can hop in with my son.
It's that time of year.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And my son comes up to me every day, and he's like, "Is your tummy better? So we can have a water fight in the pool." I'm like, almost, buddy. Hang in there. Almost. He doesn't know the difference between a stomach and a chest, apparently. My kid's not smart. All right. So we're going to the Facebook questions here. This went to my fan page, Murray V Comedy. No, Murray Valeriano Comedy and my regular one. So Robert Kruger asks, so actually I have two questions. By the way, I didn't screen these. I'm reading these as they come in, right? You can attest to that, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, so I'm not screening these, so you might stump me. I might think of a better answer later. Mm-hmm. And I'll answer on the next one. I have two questions. How are you faring? Which I think we just said, that, right?
Yeah.
And what is your all-time can't live without song?
Oh.
Song.
Just one?
I know. All time can't live without song. I'll tell you, I heard, I know. I mean, I have, on the Rock Solid podcast, we call it our mental patient songs, the ones you can hear over and over.
Huh.
And Robert, I got to go.
I mean, usually it's like Desert Island Discs.
Right.
So
it's like an album or a band, and you get like three of them.
Yeah.
not one song get sick of. Oh, man, it might be... It might be Under Pressure by Queen and David Bowie.
That's a great one, yeah.
I just never get sick of that song.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to go with because I just heard it either last night or on the way over today.
Sure,
and I was thinking about how I never get sick of this song and how much I love it. Mm-hmm. And it's weird that Vanilla Ice owns it.
Yeah.
Right?
I think it's a rumor that he has the rights. I've looked into it.
Oh, really?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because I thought it was real.
He has claimed that he owns it, but
you're saying you can't trust Vanilla Ice. You're saying that guy lies.
Perhaps Rob Van Winkle is not 100%.
I don't know who Rob Van Winkle is, but God damn it, Vanilla Ice. you can trust that guy.
Didn't he tell? He used to tell stories like got stabbed and like
He was hung out of a hotel room by Suge Knight. Yeah. Mm-hmm. May or may not.
What a shame that guy doesn't have a career anymore.
But man, he's cool.
All right. Nice. Barbara Goodbar Provitz. I hope I'm saying that right. Glad you're doing well and can get back to work. Oh, all right. Well, thank you. That's fantastic. I'm glad to be back to work too until I tank it for an hour on Saturday.
Got to listen to Rusty Cow.
How do I
use some of that material?
Because I was going to record a new album in the fall.
Uh-huh.
And this whole heart thing like changed my whole how do I, that's what I'm dealing with right now. How do I go up on stage and not talk about it?
Oh, I don't think you should not talk about it.
How do I talk about it and then go into, hey, so being a dad's weird. You know, like I don't know where it fits yet is basically.
Oh,
I got
5 minutes.
I did an open mic last night. I got 5 minutes. I did really well on it. And by the way, everybody's like, oh, you're going to get so great material out of this. I'm like, I would like to remind you right now that I almost died.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Not really hilarious.
No,
at
not
this
yet.
Moment.
you know, tragedy plus time.
Right. True.
So you need a little time.
True. So I don't know where it fits in the set. I'm winging it. I'm glad I'm doing that smaller club on Saturday in Irvine the following week. So Perla out of, I think she's Portland. Damn it, Perla. Oh, she has always yelled at her, so I had to do that. What the feeling and emotion when you woke up post-surgery and give Mary a big hug? She's a big fan of Mary's also. I will give Mary a big hug. She's been a rock star. What is the feeling and emotion when you woke up post-surgery? Well, the feeling was really high on drugs. It was, I don't remember like the first couple of hours.
Yeah, how could you?
But I came out of anesthesia and I was still buzzing off that and Oxycontin that was being given to me for pain. Now, my wife says I was goofy and giddy and the cardiologist was there and she said, you're flirting with the cardiologist, so I knew you were fine. God, I hope my cardiologist doesn't listen to this. Oh, no.
I mean.
Oh, no. So it was fun. That was fine. And then Graham came over and my friend John and I did a little blurb on the Comedy Film Nerds completely out of it. I'm sure I didn't make any sense. And it was just a good time until about midnight. And then I felt like I got hit by a truck. Mm-hmm. It all hit me really hard, all the pain and everything else. And then that was the worst night was the first night. And I don't know how much I've gone into this. So forgive me if I'm repeating myself.
I don't remember.
The most pain I had on that first night was my back. It wasn't even my chest. And I found out is when you crack your ribs open, your spine and the where your ribs meet your spine is like the binding of a book. So they went also. And so that was the worst fucking pain I could. And I had to lay on my back because I still can't sleep on my side.
Really?
Yeah, because the ribs have to grow back together. The sternum has to grow back together. And if you go on this side, it could slip.
Oh, wow.
And kind of overlap each other. And then they got to cut me open and reset.
Oof.
So, and it sucks. I've been a side sleeper my whole life.
Yeah, me too.
Oh, and it sucks so bad. And I have to sleep on a wedge, like where I'm leaned up, which makes me snore. So, like, not even like snort, like that kind of snore that wakes you up.
Uh-huh.
I wake myself up 12 times and I just, just 12 times. And I'm driving my wife insane. It's driving her crazy.
Oh, man.
So I guess those were the first feelings. And then the feelings, and then the next day, by the way, surgeons have no bedside manner.
No.
They don't deal with people.
Uh-uh.
They deal with, anesthetized organs. Mm-hmm. And so they have no, and my surgeon came in, and real quick, I stayed busy till surgery. Well, I stayed busy till surgery. I did sets before.
In here right before?
Yeah, I did sets up till Sunday night, I think, and I shouldn't have. Yeah. Because I had to bail. I was at the Improv on Saturday night or Friday night, stacked lineup, and I had to pull it. Like I couldn't get through it. I was literally wheezing and holding on to the microphone stand, and I'm just like, guys, I got to get out of here. And I told them what was up, got off on a laugh, but still, I was like, fuck, man, I just brought this A-level show. Like, I felt really bad about it. And then Frazier was like, you're having heart surgery. Don't worry about it. Frazier Smith, who we got to get on this show.
Yeah, it's great.
By the way, Theo Vaughn, who I don't hang out with very often, he heard me talking to Frazier about surgery, and he was like, oh, man, in that Southern accent, oh, man, I hope you do well. I'm going to pray for you. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really nice for Theo.
Yeah.
He's a good guy. So the surgeon comes in the next day. He kind of tells me everything that went on, and I still don't remember it because I'm still out of it, but Mary wrote it down. And so the reason I was wheezing so bad on the stage, on the Ice House in the Improv, was my heart leak progressed so much in those 3 weeks that it went from a serious leak to what he called a torrential leak. So it was leaking into my lungs, like torrential. That's what they use for hurricanes and floods, right? And he came in, and I was supposed to get operated on Friday, and they had a fallout on Monday, and they moved me to Monday. And he came in, and he said, yeah, you have torrential leakage. I'm glad we did it on Monday because you might not have seen Friday. Ugh. You didn't have to tell me that.
Yeah, yeah.
How does that...
Necessary factoid.
You're getting paid anyway without giving me that information. You don't need to know... I didn't need to know that.
Yeah, you don't need to know how close you are.
And it floored me. I mean, it literally floored. That was the first time I cried after surgery. Was just like, and I said, thank you for saving my life. And I shook his hand. And all the nurses teared up. It was like, yeah, if my wife wasn't here, I could totally get blown. That's terrible. It's horrible. Don't do that. I never know how to pronounce this guy's name. Domingo Siempre? I think he's out of Atlanta. He never came to see me in Atlanta. Thanks a lot, Domingo. What records make you cry now? Oh, speaking of which, I don't know what records make me cry. I've been a puss ever since I had a kid, though. So I like stuffed all my emotions down for 30 years, which is probably why I blew out a valve. but ever since I had a kid, I cried everything. So it's kind of listen to like randomly pick a podcast I've been on in the last 2 years. I'm pretty sure I cried on it.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm not afraid of it anymore, so I don't mind. Emotions are a good thing. Graham Elwood and I have been talking about that.
I've been crying a lot more. I've gotten emotional a lot more, like in movies and stuff, since I got married.
Oh, sure.
Because I have something that I care about and I hold on to.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's just, I can think about just dumb, like with my son, like there was like his second day of kindergarten where he really didn't know anybody. But he was playing with two kids at recess, and I came to pick him up, and everybody was playing in the yard. So I said, you want to stay and play? And he's like, yeah. And so he walks over to the two guys, and he just like halfway over, he started waving his hand to him as he was walking out. And it makes me cry thinking about it every time. I don't know why, but, he asked what records make me. First of all, records, welcome to 2018. They're MP3s now. I don't know. Music's always made me cry, though. I always said U2's my favorite band because they're the only band that makes me cry on a regular basis. I remember watching them play The Unforgettable Fire a couple of years ago, and I got choked up at that.
I definitely get emotional at concerts of bands I've wanted to see for a while.
Oh, like, sure.
Yeah, man.
That's the great thing about music, man. It really heightens your emotions, whether it's negative or positive or whatever emotion you're feeling, you can find something to wallow in that emotion.
Yeah.
Happiness, depression. Mm-hmm. That's why I think Christian rock sucks so bad. This is my theory. This is my theory on why Christian rock sucks so bad. Yeah. Is because the big reason is because everything's going to be all right because of Christ.
Yeah.
And sometimes you don't want everything to be all right.
No.
Sometimes you just want to wallow in your depression for a couple hours. Sometimes you want to wallow in lust. Sometimes you want to wallow in happiness. Sometimes you want to wallow in stupidity. You know, and every song is like, don't worry about it. God's got your back. And you know what? Sometimes I don't want anybody to get my back right now. I want to sit here and cry.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a good question, though. I'll have to think more on that.
Yeah.
All right. Tom Nuremberg out of San Francisco area, I believe. I'm sure he's going to try and be funny and tell me I'm not funny on this one. Can you talk about the night before surgery? Oh, that's interesting. I imagine what kind of thoughts, fear, and feelings. I can't imagine what kind of thoughts, fear, and feelings. Plus, Was it surprising to find out some people actually like you? Ah, did I call it? Did I call it? Fuck you, Tom. He's a nice guy. Him and his wife always come up and see me when I'm up in San Francisco. He's a big rock solid fan also. You know, it's funny. Like I said, the night before was Mother's Day, so we went out to dinner and stuff. And I remember I emailed my cardiologist. I was always looking for reasons. And I said, can I have a drink before? Because you're not supposed to eat or drink anything from midnight on before your surgery. I'm like, can I have a, before midnight, can I have a drink? And she's like, I would if I were you. So we went out to dinner and we came home and I had a scotch and we were watching, it was Sunday night, so we were watching John Oliver. And every once in a while, I would do something like this, like it would kind of dawn on me and I'd tap my hands and Mary would be like, are you okay? I'm like, yeah, I'm fine. Yeah. But that was really it. It really didn't hit me until being in the hospital
the next morning.
And that was rough. I mean, I didn't know what to expect. And what a fucking shitty morning that was. We go in, I get checked in, I'm in my bed and the nurse comes in and she's like, all right. And you have a wristband that has all your information on it and they bleep it like a scanner and they're like bleep, bleep. And she's like, okay. Well, you're not the patient I thought you were. Like, what? She's like, you're not even in the system. I'm like, I'm having open heart surgery in an hour. Get me in the fucking system, man. And then again, no bedside manner, by anybody. The anesthesiologists were great. They were cool and told me what was going down.
I should hope so, yeah.
And then the plan was to repair my heart valve. But if they didn't, they were going to have a valve on hand to replace it. And there's two, you can go electrical, for lack of better words, mechanical, that's it, or a pig valve or a cow valve.
Mm-hmm.
And a cow valve only, or pig valves, they only last like 15 years.
Yeah.
So if I got a valve like that in, I would have to get cracked open at what, 60 or something like that. And so we opted to go with a mechanical valve. Mm-hmm. And we talked, Mary and I talked about it and discussed it. And if we took a mechanical valve, I'd have to take some blood thinners for the rest of my life. I'm like, all right, I can deal with that. I don't want to go through this again.
Yeah.
So the surgeon team comes in and is like, okay, you're coming in for open heart surgery. We're going to repair a valve. Which valve do you want? Do you want the animal valve or do you want the mechanical valve? The animal valve, I prefer because he starts selling me on the mechanical valve. The animal valve. And I'm like, what are you? All right, first of all, this isn't a question that you just present to me an hour before we go. What do you fucking think, dude? We've thought about this and we're going with the mechanical valve. And you're going to have to take medication with you. Yeah, I know. Shut up. We're taking the mechanical valve. Why are you asking? And I fucking laid into it And then Mary.
Yeah, you're under stress.
Mary got into it too. She's like, you guys have no bedside manner. And then you had to sign all these papers, like, if you die, you're not going to sue and all that shit.
Yeah, you had to, like, mark on your chest to fix this heart, not the other one.
Well, what they did was they put X's on my feet where the arteries were. And so they could find the artery without having to look for it in case they needed to put in. I'm like, I hope this doesn't somebody interpret this as amputate my feet. In there. Look at Kira Saltanovich sticking her head in here. You want to come sit in? I'm answering questions from listeners. You want to come sit in?
I thought you were done. No,
that's why I'm talking into a microphone with headphones.
I don't know.
Do you know how podcasting works?
Oh my gosh. I didn't want to rush you.
You didn't want to rush me as you stuck your head in, tapping your wrist.
I thought you were. The door was open. Bye.
Do you want to sit in here and talk?
No, I'm going to look for my guest.
All right.
Okay.
One of my best friends. I love her. So those thoughts, I mean, and every once in a while, the thought of I'm not going to make it, die on the table, what can happen? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Every once in a while that would come in. And I'm not, and like I've said, I'm not afraid of dying. I think I said, I just don't want to leave my wife and kid.
Yeah.
You know, I don't want to leave.
And
then my mom, and you guys know the big religious background I grew up in, and my parents are born again Christians. And my mom texted me and she's like, has this experience changed your outlook on spirituality? And I said, no, I still have the same outlook I had beforehand. And I go, I think that's a pretty good sign of how I feel.
Mm-hmm.
Then she asked me what I believed in. And then that started a whole thing.
Oh, geez.
And she's like, I'm going to send you books. I'm like, I'm not going to read them, Mom. Yeah. She's like, why aren't you going to read them? I'm like, I have 10 books. More than that, listeners sent me rock books. like biographies
and autobiographies, yeah,
and stuff like that. And I'm like, that so added good. Like five, you know, they naturally went up to the top of the,
yeah,
the
yeah.
top of the list because the listeners sent them. And yeah. I want to read about the Tragically Hip. So I'm like, Mom, don't send them. I'm not going to read them. And she's like, well, I'll send them and maybe the Lord will move you to read them. I'm like, all right. All right.
Okay.
You can. They're going on my desk and I'm not going to read them. Just like I'm not. I have four surfing books I haven't even read. So I don't think I'm going to read somebody's. But don't you think that's a like you're firm in your belief if you're looking at death?
Yeah.
And it doesn't change.
Yeah. If your it doesn't belief? Change. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because so many people look at death and then they find God. And,
yeah.
And,
yeah.
And my theory is like I looked.
Yeah. You didn't. Well, you also, you were under, your heart was literally stopped for a while. For 5 hours.
5 hours, yeah, they stopped my heart for 5 hours.
If you didn't see anything then,
it's a good point.
I mean,
it's a good point. It's a good point. By the way, when they told me they're going to stop my heart for 5 hours, that's all I heard.
Yeah.
They're saying everything else. I just heard, stop your heart for 5 hours, stop your heart for 5 hours, stop your heart for 5 hours.
After you told me, that's all I heard.
Oh, man. Fuck.
The next podcast, I was like, 5 hours.
Yeah.
5 hours.
Jeez. Well, that's crazy.
Yeah.
Did I answer that good enough?
Yeah.
So, yeah, so it really kind of hit me. That morning, especially when I had to say goodbye to Mary because she wasn't allowed in the operating room, which she insisted she wanted to be. And I'm like, you'll never, honey, you got, she got, I got a surfing accident where I cut my back. She had to put Neosporin on it. She puked in the toilet. I'm like, there's no way. Yeah. I appreciate it, but there's no way you're going to. So saying goodbye to her was hard. And I told her that she saved my life twice.
Yep.
And kissed her and went into, it's crazy. The anesthesia hit me. Like I remember getting wheeled out, mm-hmm. turning the corner, and then I don't remember anything.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't remember anything.
I remember counting back from 10, 9, and nothing.
Oh, I didn't even have to count.
Yeah.
And I'd gone in for another procedure in there, so I knew the hallway, and I knew where eventually, you know, where I was going to end up. And I remember seeing the big red sign that said, you know, this way to surgery. And that's the last thing I remember.
Actually, the first time I went under, the anesthesiologist said, think of the prettiest girl in school. And I was like, wait, what? And I was out.
Oh, really?
No chance. No chance to even.
I hope your wife wasn't there.
No, this was, I was 13.
Good.
Something. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Poor Leah. Did I answer Tom Newberg's question?
Yeah.
And plus, is it surprising about how many people actually like you? I don't know. Are you jealous? Nobody likes you. come on. Suck it, Tom. David Ace Gutierrez. I hope I'm saying your name right. He lives not too far from me. But yet doesn't ever come see my shows. He's a big Rock Solid fan.
Mm, okay.
Will this near-death experience make you nicer? Go fuck yourself. You know, I was thinking about that. I was wondering what my epiphany was.
Uh-huh.
I didn't have one. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like people have near-death experiences, and I guess maybe because I didn't realize how near-death I was until after the fact.
Could be that.
But, you know, people change their lifestyles and stuff like that. But I live such a...
You didn't have anything to change. That's why this was all so weird.
Yeah. I mean, it's made my wife and I closer.
That's good.
That's for sure.
That's awesome.
That's what happens when you poop in front of your wife.
Mm-hmm.
I've never pooped in front of her. I never pooped in front of strangers ever.
Yeah.
Until they didn't tell you that going into surgery. Oh, by the way, for the following week, you're going to have to poop in front of a bunch of strangers.
Mm-hmm.
So at one point I was like, I would rather have died on the table. This is fucking awful. I'm like, why can't you step out? It's like, no, we have to make sure you poop and how much it is. I'm like, who's lying about their bowel movements?
Yeah. Come on. There will be evidence.
Yeah. And they're obsessed. They're obsessed because all your intestines is shut down from anesthesia.
Mm-hmm.
And they're obsessed with you pooping. Like, hey, did you have a bowel movement today? Did you have? I'm like, why? It's awful. And then you have to do it. And the people around watching you, it's fucking terrible.
Yeah.
But being wiped as an adult, fantastic. Oh my God. I pooped again. Just like, oh, it was awesome. No wonder babies are so happy on that changing table. Spring Byram, no questions. Just glad you're getting back into the swing of things. Well, thank you. She's a big fan. She's been following me since I hosted Billing Balls radio show.
Nice.
Courtney Cronin.
Guest.
Not too long ago. I love her. I have so many, but they're all inappropriate. I'll email them, as you should. John Davidson, big fan of the show, both shows, big music fan, came down for CU2 at the Forum, which I couldn't go to, so he sent me a bunch of highlights and videos from that. Thank you.
Awesome.
Has a surgery recovery made you look at life and priorities any differently? Oh, we just kind of touched on that.
Yeah, yeah.
Right?
I think
I had my priorities. Hopefully.
Yeah, yeah.
Example things you had once thought you could put off for a while. that you feel the need to be done sooner or ahead of something else?
Hmm.
You know, I took my wife to a concert the other night, you know, and we haven't done that in years. Years. I can't remember, you know, and we haven't had a date in years. So I think that.
There you go.
I think that really helped. Yeah, and like I said, it has brought my wife and I closer, I think, and spending more time with Frank.
Mm-hmm.
Not like, you know, when he has to build Legos, I build them, not saying I'll do it later and then never do it. No, because that's what you'll see. You'll see. That's
Yeah. Totally.
There's only so many fucking Legos.
Yeah, let's do that later.
Yeah, yeah.
And then, no intention.
So I don't think, I hope my priorities are, now it could be that I have my epiphany later.
Maybe.
You know, maybe there is an epiphany coming. You know, because when I had my first kid, my only kid, my friend Mac Anderson said, you know, when the baby comes out, it's instant love between the kid and the mom. And between dad and the father, it takes a little time. It can come that day. Come in a week and come in years. It can come, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think mine came when I went to Canada, believe it or not.
Mm.
As miserable as I was up there. And that's where I first met Aaron down here. And he had to live through all my texts of how miserable I was up there.
Mm-hmm.
But I spent so much time with Frank because we didn't know anybody that I think that's when my real love for my son came, when it made it real.
Mm-hmm.
Casey Murphy's been a longtime listener. What is the most surreal thing you experienced?
Ooh.
Maybe my IV tree. I had like 30 bags going into a hole in my neck.
That was nuts.
That was insane. I have really gross pictures. I haven't posted them. I show them to everybody. If you see me, ask me. I'll show them to you. No problem. But I don't think I'm going to put them on
social
media.
They're best seen in person.
Yeah. surreal thing. I guess it would just be waking up and seeing these literal tubes coming out of my chest and stomach, draining my heart.
Do I have to?
Hold on, who is it?
It is somebody that I can't recall who it is, but it is somebody.
Am I going
famous.
Long? Is that what's going on?
It's 12:05, yeah. So
hold on one second. I almost died.
I know.
All right? Thank you. Scott Braunohler, he doesn't have that big of an IMDb.
Oh, Braunohler. Yeah, that's who it is. Yeah, okay.
Yeah, so that was probably the most surreal thing, seeing those tubes come out of my chest. And I was being paced from an outside pacemaker.
Yeah.
I had a wire in my chest that was pacing my heart at 100, and every once in a while the nurse would come in and just turn it off to see where my... And I'd just go... All right, Kira's giving me shit. I have to do more of this. Nathan Russell. Oh, he opened for me in Washington when this all went down. He was with me the whole time.
Yeah.
Can people still touch your heart emotionally since someone has done it physically? That's a deep question.
That's romantic.
I know. I knew he liked me a little too much. He laughed a little too hard. Heidi Carnes Carter from Pacific Northwest added my question to the same post on Twitter. So she's on. I must have answered her earlier. All right. If I run over any more of these, I will record them from my house. I promise. But I do got to get out of here. Thank you guys for all the presents, the gifts, the t-shirts, the CDs, the DVDs, the books, the cards, the emotional outcry, the get better soon. I woke up to literally hundreds of texts, comments on Facebook, Twitter. Thank you, Aaron, for being the point person for all the comedians over here. And I'm glad to be back. I'm glad to see Aaron again. I'm glad to be podcasting. Stay tuned for John DiResta and Risky Bets. It's a good one. I'll see you guys next week. Thanks a lot.
Do you have kids?
Yeah.
How many?
One.
How old?
Six.
All right, everyone. I have three right in a row. Risky has a whole bunch.
Mm-hmm.
Two.
My son Matthew was the first one born.
Uh-huh.
And everyone said the day he's born is going to change. It's the greatest day of your life. It's going to change. Everything's going to be the greatest. So I bring it up. That's what everyone says. I said, I've done it three times, and I can say from the bottom of my heart, if you go to see Twisted Sister live on 5 Hits of Mescaline, watch 4 sets till 4 in the fucking morning. When the sun comes, as the sun's coming up, you go to White Castle's, and you get in a fight with someone from another town just because they're from another town. Then you do more coke, and you go garage sailing as an early bird. You know what I mean? As they're setting up.
Yeah, yeah.
That's better than having a kid. I love Twisted Sister. I wish Dee Snider was my mom,
right,
and my dad. I wish he was both.
Okay. I took a little bit of guitar lessons from the original bass player, Ken Neal.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Bass.
He quit because he got sober and became a born-again Christian.
Yeah, there was a lot of members. The drummer just died, you know that.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
AJ Perot died.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And they're done, finally.
Are they officially over?
They D. Schneider said if he can't headbang the way he always did.
Mm-hmm.
Hey, here's a quick funny one. This proves my love of Twisted Sister. Not just 100 live shows. My prom in 1982, Hewlett High School in Long Island.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of going to my prom in June of 82 with Doreen Zampaglione, I went to go see Twisted Sister live the night of my prom.
Uh-huh.
And I was the captain of the football team, and I still chose Twisted Sister over the prom and Doreen Zampaglione. I went to see Twisted Sister with Howard Lerner and Alan Nyschlosh and just found out that 1 hour and 20 minute show is on YouTube, and I watch it every night.
Oh, really?
I put myself back there. That's my safe place.
That's the great thing about YouTube. You can go back and get those concerts. Some of them, anyway.
And look at this. All I ever do, I smoke pot, and then I watch it, and it's really good sound, and it's like, you know, it's the whole Twisted Sister package, and I look for my arm raised in the light. I try and, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
to decipher where I am.
Have any distinguishing tattoos at that point?
I do not. And watch this. Whenever they turn to the audience, which they do, because it's a really professionally shot, whenever they turn to the audience, it's like 918-year-old white guys with a mullet. Like, you can never, like, I can get the FBI involved and they couldn't pick me out. Do you know what I mean?
Which, ironically, you just described my prom.
There you go.
900 white guys with mullets. And I was rocking the best one.
Are you East Coast?
New Jersey.
Oh, no shit.
Yeah.
I'll talk slow. Whatever. Part?
You're from Staten Island, right?
How dare you? Long Island.
I thought you were from Staten Island.
Nah, dude. Long Island. Right. I'm not retarded.
What do you call it? Five cities or something?
Five towns. Five
That's
towns.
A microphone.
Yeah,
Risky.
Now speaking
of... if you're a professional comedian or not.
Speaking of road gigs, I took Risky to a hometown show. You know one of those shows where everybody comes out? Have you done them?
No, I have not done one yet.
Oh, dude. I had to do three in a row. And it was the same show with the same people and same act.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the same act?
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know about you, but I don't want to know anybody. I don't want my wife there. I don't want my dad there. I don't want anybody. I want to be in Milwaukee, kill, have fun.
Absolutely.
Shake a couple of hands.
That's why I haven't done it.
Go choke one out.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? With Risky, of course. But I did this homecoming show, and I brought Risky with me. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, hey, we work together a lot. Now I'm going to take you to the New York show.
You know, I never thought I'd like New York until I went with John.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he was like my personal tour guide for, what, like 3 days or something?
3 days, and one day was really funny. Do you remember the one day? I took him from my mom's house in Long Island. Mm-hmm. But even though we're in Long Island, we're a mile and a half from the Queens border.
Mm-hmm.
You just go through a red light, and you're in Queens.
Right.
Right? Queens and Brooklyn are on Long Island, and no one knows it. I didn't even know it until I was 25 years old.
Right.
But if you go from Long Island to Queens, you just go through a red light.
Mm-hmm.
No bridge, no nothing. So in one day, I think I took Risky to... Oh, I know it was. We stopped at the Central Park, and we saw Robert De Niro's bodyguard who got in a fight with me.
Yeah, that's right.
It was the weirdest thing. Like, I said to Risky... So watch this. We went to Midtown Manhattan in a car. We went from Long Island to Midtown Manhattan, Central Park, Ground Zero.
Right.
Coney Island.
Mm-hmm.
Then for the best pizza in Long Island in Howard Beach, where John Gotti grew up, New Park Pizza, and then home. And that was all in 8 hours.
Yeah. Wow, that's a good tour.
Once I had the pizza out there, that's all I wanted to eat.
Oh, absolutely.
I didn't need anything else. I was like, what do you want to eat? Pizza. You know?
For sure.
I mean, I've never
really
had
good.
Anything like that before in my life.
Yeah, and I can't find a good bagel. I know that's like an old cliche, yeah, but out here pizza is not as good, but I can find a good bagel.
I found one, and it's around the corner from my house.
Where do you live?
On the west side. And it's called New York Bagels, and I stay away from anything that's called New York anything.
Yeah.
Right.
It's because it's not. But for some reason, this one is great.
I
went by default because my kid wanted a bagel, so I went there.
Wow.
And I'm telling them, when we go to the East Coast, they're going to be really good. And then they make them there.
Yeah.
And they're fantastic.
That's kind of like me trying to find biscuits and gravy out here. You can't find any good ones.
So can I tell them the first, because this doesn't happen.
Can I introduce the show?
Go ahead.
John, yeah, I didn't even know we were on. I'm over here kicked back, not even by my mic. I didn't know you'd even start.
I love, listen, man, I would rather somebody come in, talking than pulling teeth, man. Yeah. Which I've had to pull a few teeth on. I was like, you had 2 weeks to prepare. Why am I forcing things? But I wanted to get I wanted to say thanks for tuning in the Road Stories podcast, everybody. I'm your host Murray Valeriano,
yay,
part of the All Things Comedy Network. Aaron.
Glad to have you back, Mar.
Thanks, buddy.
Missed you, buddy.
Oh, thanks, man. Aaron came to visit me the day after I got home.
Yeah.
How did I look?
It was, I mean, I think you rocked a pretty good, asleep for 2 years beard.
I did. I ended up growing a big David Letterman beard time. It got much bigger the weeks after you left.
Oh, I can only imagine.
Yeah. I was like 160. I weighed like 165. I grew this beard. Yeah. I put on a stocking cap, and my wife's like, you look like Tom Hanks in Philadelphia. Get rid of it. So I couldn't wear
and doesn't that. Those surgeries inherently, and I don't mean to be rude,
no, please.
Don't they inherently turn your hair gray sometimes? You know what I mean?
Like, I don't think so. I don't know.
Oh, you never heard that? Uh-huh. That's just the stress of, you know what I mean?
Have I gotten
that.
Grayer?
No.
I mean, it looks good.
I've been gray since I was 23, John Duresta.
Yeah, you've been gray a long time.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I never remembered that.
Oh, really?
No, but you know what it looks like? The quarterback from the Green Bay Packers. He's got a cool gray crew cut all the time. He retired.
Oh, Brett Favre.
Yeah. He's got nice hair now in the Wrangler commercials.
I had a kidney transplant.
Yes.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, it turned my hair loose, though.
Oh, shazoink. Yo,
it did, really.
I think I knew him about 6 months, and one day he went to readjust the hat, and I was like, hey, oh, that was your closer.
I use it
Hold
in
on.
My act, yeah.
Hey, dude, this is closer.
Oh, all right.
How's that?
It works great.
Shtick.
Big surprise. I didn't know you were light up there.
I did.
Because I don't think I've ever seen you without a hat.
Yeah, oh, yeah.
All right, we're going to see.
Good.
Oh, what?
Yeah. All right. It's a good fucking shocker on stage.
Twisted sister.
I always call a young guy up, and I talk to him.
Oh, that's a funny bit. Yeah, Can I explain it?
Yeah, go ahead.
He says he'll pull up a really young, he'll find out a guy that's kind of married, that's handsome, that's 25 years old. Mm-hmm. What do you do? I do this, what do? I do that. And he handles it really well. And Risky then does like an assessment, you know, like, oh, okay, so you got this, everything's going great. But he builds it up, but just remember, and then give him the punchline.
Yeah, I say, I tell him, you know, which is the truth, and I've thought about it a lot of times, is when I've talked to older men, it's like, they were holding something back, you know. I could see it in their eyes. They were holding something back. So I tell the young guy that. I go, you know, I always used to, you know, talk to older men. They were holding something back. And I go, well, it's your lucky day because I'm going to tell you what it is. And then I say, we know your future. And then I pull my hat off and I go, it's right here. Someday you're going to look in the mirror and Risky Betts is going to be looking back at you, you know. And
it's a funny closer.
Really goes
That's
over.
That's hilarious. Here, That's awesome. My guest today, who I've said their name three times, I don't know why I have to force an introduction, but this is a professional podcast. That's why I got to do it. It's John Duresta.
Thank you.
Finally, after
Thank
all
you.
These years, thanks for coming on.
Yeah, no problem.
And Risky Betts.
Thank you.
My buddy. How you been?
Yes, sir. Good. Thank you.
I haven't
much.
Seen you in a long time.
Yeah,
I'm glad you guys could come
too
on.
Long.
Absolutely. I'm glad you guys could come on. I love the pairing of this, show that you guys
we always thought we did a really fun show, and I just like Risky, so we met at the Canoga Park Bowl.
That's where I met Risky.
That's right. That's
right?
It is,
Remember
it
Monday,
is.
Tuesday,
I hosted
Wednesday?
That thing for a year and a half.
That place is kind of legendary.
I met so many cool people.
Yeah, that place is kind of legendary.
Yeah.
And he always had a good car.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with the Reggie was perfect, and he shows up with gas in the not like a comedian that shows up an hour and a half late.
Yeah.
You know what
right,
I mean?
Right.
And there's smoke coming out from under the engine, and you have another 80 miles to go.
Yeah.
So he would show up on time. He was one of the first guys ever to not have to look at the. This is how far back we go. Remember the Thomas guide?
Yeah.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
He was like the first guy that jumped to like some crazy device.
Yeah,
like
really?
You know,
remember the Tom Toms or whatever.
He always had. Yeah. I'm just remembering. He always had those before anyone else. And you know, like why don't
hey,
I get one?
You know
one?
What? I was just learning, and I started late. You know,
right.
I actually evolved into it out of cowboy poetry. And but you know, I used to bring 25, 30 comedians up a night.
Yeah, yeah.
And you were exceptional.
Oh, thank you.
And John was always, he always was able to turn a crowd, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So when he asked me to go on the road, I knew it was because I had transportation. I mean.
No, but also, here's the deal. I was his coach, and a lot of people don't like
he
that.
He was coaching me in the beginning, too.
And not only is he a good learner, I said, look, instead of me looking at a tape 5 minutes a week, if you, you know, I'll get and get you a little bit of money, not a lot, obviously.
Right.
And, you know, you can get funnier from minute to minute because, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? As soon as you step off stage that night, you know,
absolutely.
I'm going to bang out a joint. He's not. And then I'm going to go over his notes.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And he's a quick learner. Some of them aren't. You know what I mean?
Well, I've had a lot of guys now, they come to me and they ask me, you know, like, what do I need to do? And I tell them the same things you used to tell me.
Which was?
Be a student of the craft.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, that was the first main thing I learned is just be a student of the craft.
And here's another big thing. I have a friend of mine that's completely scared of doing stand-up. Like, he thinks, like, if you bomb a joke, like, your arm falls off. Like, he's, you know what I mean? Even worse, they've called his name and he's ran out the back door.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Wow.
How's that? I mean, that's nervous.
Did you tell him that if your arm fell off every time you bombed, none of us would have arms?
He just doesn't get it.
Or legs.
He has such stage fright. What? This is how bad it is. And he's done it before. He's done it like 10 times in 10 years, and it's gone well. He even took a class for 3 weeks, and he was the funniest one in the class. The teacher pulled him aside and said, dude, you don't need the class. That's how good he is, but the stage fright. So this goes to show you how you can get in your head. I said, if you did 8 or 10 already, what was the one that made you run out the back fire exit as they were calling your name? You know what I mean?
Sure.
He said, I looked through the curtain and I saw people in nice clothing and drinks that had umbrellas in them. And he gave the power away to the umbrella and the nice clothes because he was used to seeing loser comedians looking down at their prepaid 7-Eleven phones. Do you know what I mean? See what I did there? But I gave him, last night he was going to do a set, and I said, the number one rule, have fun, come on, and this is one I gave Risky, and then he reciprocates it back to me. I just put, come on loose and get looser.
Oh, interesting.
But he can't even, this guy's so, he can't grasp that. You know, we can.
Sure.
And he was like, I'm memorizing my first 3 minutes, and I tried to text him. I said, dude, if you try to memorize 3 minutes, the second you forget one word or one line, your mind's going to scream, I'm bombing.
Absolutely.
Like, he's going to have a split circuit.
Right.
Once you go in your head, it's...
But he's going to set himself up for that. I said, you don't have... I said, if you walked up to a group of people today, and there were 10 of them, and you walked up, I said, would you tell them a memorized story, or would you just kind of... See, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's easy for me to say that.
Sure.
But anyway,
now I've now condensed. Oh, I'm sorry.
No, go ahead, Risky.
Oh, I've now condensed that what you told me, you know, which was worked for me for years. You know, start loose and get looser. Now, when I walk on stage, the last thing I tell myself is you're having a conversation with your best friend, and it just loosens me up. It's the same. It's the same mental thought. You know?
You know what I say, and I think I brought this up. I don't know if the mic was on. I had to do 3 Woodmere shows in a row. I grew up in a town called Woodmere. Woodmere,
Staten Island.
How dare you? How dare you? Staten Island is Brooklyn with a cover charge.
Come on, I'm bridge and tunnel, man.
Yeah.
I grew up in Jersey.
How dare you? I'm not retarded. I'm from Long. I'm a FLID. How about that?
What's a FLID?
Fucking Long Island douchebag.
Oh, I never heard that.
You want to hear a funny road story?
Yes.
I'm selling merch in Detroit. Did you ever do that gig in Livonia? It's a good gig.
What's it called?
Joey's Kickers Sports Bar, but upstairs is a... this is what a crazy world it is. Remember there was like a kicker at Ace Ventura that lost the game or something? I don't remember Ace Ventura. Supposedly this guy owns this club. He quit the business because he missed a big kick.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and now he calls the place Kickers, and it's a comedy club.
Funny.
But supposedly that guy exists somewhere in the world that he missed a kick, and like his whole life spiraled out of control. He opened up a comedy club. And
to continue the spiral.
Really.
And I'm not sure why I brought up Livonia. Give me that.
FLIDS.
Oh, I'm selling the merch, and a guy walks up, and I thought I knew every racial term there was.
Sure.
You know what I mean? I'm good at that. Every slur. And he walks up, as soon as you opened your mouth, I told my wife, this guy's a fucking FLID. He's a fucking FLID. Like he's never seen one.
Right.
And I go, what's a FLID? He goes, it's a fucking Long Island douchebag. It's what the whole world thinks of you guys. So I've since learned that the only people that really know FLID are a lot of college kids up and down the East Coast. Like if you go to school in Maryland or Boston, they go, I got stuck with a FLID.
Right.
Like they know what it is. Like they already pre-FLID.
Sure.
And I'm going to quiz you guys as to who's the number one FLID that ever lived. There's a number one and two. If you get it, I'll give you $10.
Danny DeVito.
No.
Oh, he's Jersey, actually, I think.
You're never going to get it. But it's easy when I tell you. Joey Buttafuoco.
Oh, of course.
Duh. And then who's a close second? Come on.
Amy?
Alec Baldwin.
Oh, I didn't know those guys were from Long
fucking
Island.
Flint.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Massapequa, Jerry Seinfeld.
You can't not put Buttafuoco in. He's got to be.
Buttafuoco's
right?
the biggest
one,
Flint
right?
that ever lived, yeah, but absolutely. Alec Baldwin and Stern is a Flint. Yeah. You know what I mean?
Sure.
Yeah.
I didn't know he was Long Island either.
Who, Stern?
Yeah.
How dare you?
I don't listen to Stern. I know.
Rockville Center.
I know.
Who else is from Rockville? Dude, I'm a Long Island. I know everything. Who else is from Rockville Center? Howard Stern, Joan Jett.
Oh, really?
Dave Attell.
Okay.
And Amy Schumer moved there when their family went broke from Manhattan. Rockville Center. Oh, and also, ready for this? Henry Hill. Remember when Henry Hill had the apartment with the girls that he was doing the coke?
Mm-hmm.
That was in Rockville Center.
Okay.
And it was behind my Uncle Tony's house. Literally, when we were kids, we would look over to the apartment. It was the first time I ever saw an apartment building.
Right.
You know, I'm from Long Island. Everyone lived in a nice house.
Sure.
We would look over my Uncle Tony's back fence, and there was an apartment building with poor kids, like Puerto Rican kids playing in a puddle, and you were like, this is only from the movies. What's wrong? And Henry Hill lived in that apartment. We didn't know it, obviously.
Right. Henry Hill. Aaron, do you know who Henry Hill is?
Yeah. From Goodfellas, yeah?
Yes.
There
okay.
you go. Yeah.
This is what I remember from Long Island. Honda of Mineola.
Okay.
They had a theme song that just stuck in your head for decades.
Honda of Mineola.
Couldn't get it out. 20 years.
And then finally, I just remembered
the rest to just put it back in my head.
I didn't even know it. That's what a comedic genius, as I was humming the first line, I said, I'm going to find it.
And then...
Keys on Van Nuys.
That's the West Coast version. And then I paved Nassau Coliseum's parking lot in puke, going to many concerts there.
Yeah.
God, it's a wonder I didn't die. Because we would just go and get drunk and take acid and then drive back to Jersey.
Yeah. Oh, you made the whole drive. You know what we did? We once drove to Monsters of Rock. It's funny. We drove from Long Island to the Meadowlands, outdoor heavy metal concert all day long. Van Halen, Metallica. And to us, it was like, you might as well drive to Florida. You know how far it was from my mom's to the Meadowlands? It was like 21 miles. But think about it. No one would ever think you go through Brooklyn, Queens, Manhattan, a tunnel, and then you're in another state.
Right.
And it's like 22 miles from, it's like me driving from North Hollywood to Venice.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It seems like a long ride, but when there's no traffic, it's.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, that's where I came from.
Watch this. My whole life might have changed if I was a transit cop in the subway. Mm. Our motto, you ride, we hide. And wherever there was an event, you're supposed to ride the train at night. This is your train. If you get off that train and someone dies, you're in trouble.
Oh, so you had to...
You were assigned to a train, 857. When it pulled in, you had a 10-minute bathroom break.
Sure.
You know what I mean? You couldn't get off.
Right.
But what we would do if there was... Michael Jackson was at Madison Square Garden.
Mm-hmm.
Every cop, 8 at night to 4 in the morning, 50 of us would converge and go see Michael Jackson. We're cops. We're on duty.
Right.
You would literally see the whole side stage would be all transit cops.
Really?
So much so, we would go see heavy metal concerts. Mm-hmm. And I'm talking guys like, you know, hey, you know, they call you, there's a dead body in the Bronx. And the guy's like, be advised, I had an emergency toilet. I'll be there in 40 minutes. Like he's saying, he's like backstage at a bodybuilding concert.
Right, right.
So much so that, watch this, this is really funny. There was this is a true story. There was a two-page open, like in Sports Illustrated. You opened like almost like a centerfold.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a guy going for a breakaway. And he's like up in the air, and the goalie's up in the air. It's like the greatest picture you ever saw in the history of the world.
Hockey. Right. Huh?
Hockey.
I'm not
ice
a sports
hockey.
Guy. I'm so,
ice hockey.
I just impressed my listeners.
The whole back is blurred out except for a New York City transit cop leaning on the glass, just looking like this. And you could see his name and his badge number, Kenny Gardner. And he got in all kinds of fucking trouble.
So you were a cop back in before Giuliani cleaned the place up.
No, yeah. Dinkins was the mayor.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm 86 to 98.
Oh, 86 really?
To 98, 12 years, and 9 as a transit cop, 3 as NYPD. So I was a member of 2 police departments with 2 different police academies. Uh-huh.
Tell them about your gun.
Oh, yeah. And the very first, we were the first class to go to the range. Like July 15th of 86, we got sworn in, 380 of us were transit, 2,500 were NYPD. You talk about being a minority.
Yeah.
You think having a sitcom on UPN makes you look bad? None of us wanted to be there. You're assigned to transit.
Right.
It's like signing up for a sitcom with Disney, ABC.
Sure.
You get off the phone, you quit your job, and they go, you're on the UPN.
But that's John DiResta's story, by the way.
Yeah. So watch this. So we show up the first week, we're at the range. someone's got to go first to shoot your gun. Like, so the first day we ever reported on a Monday was at the range in the Bronx. And the guy was really funny. The instructor, he looked like Quint from Jaws.
Sure.
But with a New York accent. And we became friends. I laughed at all his jokes. And little did I realize these guys have been up there years. They've honed their shit. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're really funny. And we became very good friends. So for the next 12 years, I never went to the range twice a year.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the day you're supposed to clean it out.
Sure.
But the night before, I would get a call. Hey, John, it's Frank Genovese. You got 100. Don't show up tomorrow. I got 100. I'm a marksman.
Right, absolutely.
Yeah, you don't got to show up. So the long-winded end of all this is that by the end, my gun was so rusted shut, I would have to throw it at a perpetrator to take him down.
So you never fired?
I never fired it, never practiced with it. It was literally fused to the holster, like almost like mushrooms like had grown in it. This is a true story. This is a hard one, but it's a there one station in the subway, 62nd New Utrecht, where I think that's where Welcome Back Carter was in the opening scene, is outdoors. It's like two levels, but they're both outdoors.
Sure.
And Lemoore's Heavy Metal Club, their back door opens to the subway. So I got stationed there that night because I could listen to the heavy metal. As a transit cop, I'm standing in the subway listening to the heavy metal. And even hearing the guys out the back, like they're right at the back door. And I celebrated by drinking eating a big Carvel ice cream with a strawberry, cherry on top.
With a cherry on top.
And the cherry disappeared because it was such a hot night.
Mm-hmm.
It just disappeared. Like, I looked on my shoes. It was like it fucking went. 13 years later, I pulled the gun out of the holster.
There's your cherry, huh?
Fused to the tip like a fucking Shanka disease you'd see on a penis. Not mine. Risky. I picked it off. And I ate it. I had to. And guess what it tasted like?
A penis.
Cherry and gunpowder. It tasted like gunpowder and cherry.
I remember Lemoore's.
Yeah, you remember Lemoore's. The back door was, I never was inside it as a heavy metal fan. I used to go to Speaks. Do you remember Speaks or Hammerheads?
I don't remember Speaks.
I just saw Dee Schneider a couple weeks ago. I saw him at the flea market, and I just wanted to let him know that I've been an SMF since 1978. You know what an SMF?
Sick motherfucker, right?
Sick motherfucking friend of Twisted Sister.
Okay, sick motherfucker.
I have a little plastic card since 1978.
Wow.
I'm a member. You know what I have in my mom's bedroom? Not my mom's, my sister's bedroom in Woodmere, where he slept. They were trying to come up so heavy, these are hand-typed letters from Dee Schneider that look like they're written by a psycho. They're like 4 pages long.
Right.
This is where we're going to be. This is who, you know, what fan bought what T-shirt. As compared to now, we send like a cool-looking ad.
Sure,
This shit looked like it was handwritten by, I forgot where it was going.
I forget, but I want to say, I don't know if we talked about this, but I don't think people understand how big Twisted Sister was in the tri-state area before.
We thought they were like stars. You know, we didn't know they had wives and kids and, you know, and bills. We thought they were stars.
They were selling out 2,000-seat shows, 3,000-seat shows before they even got an
interview. That was the thing.
They were huge.
Where I grew up, it was like that was the thing on the weekend. Where is Twisted Sister going to be? And just so many good times because the music was right on. It was like glam metal played to the T. You know what I mean?
They looked good before they got the makeover. I mean, Dee Schneider in those tight pants and heels. I mean, he looked like the second coming of the New York Dolls.
It was the total package.
Yeah,
and you know what went hand in hand with it? Marijuana, drinking, girls. Like, you know what I mean? It was. And then when you knew it was over, you knew you were going to White Castles.
Exactly. We'll talk about George Jones in a minute.
Thank you. Hey, I missed all of that stuff, man. I did. I didn't even know who Twisted Sister was until I met John Dresden.
Where'd you grow up?
Utah, Nevada, and Fillmore, California. Went to high school in Fillmore.
Where's Fillmore? I feel like I passed that 1,000 times.
It's kind of over in Ventura County. It's tucked in from Ventura. It's kind of hard to find. It's between like Magic Mountain and Ventura.
Oh, that's
on
it.
On the 126 out there. It's not much.
I've seen an exit sign for it then, right?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know.
Not even that?
Fillmore sign or not, but it's where I went to high school, but I missed and then I rodeoed for a long time, you know, I mean, it was on the road. So, I mean, I met all the comedians everybody refers to, all the everything. You know, I was on the road so much.
Right.
I didn't really get to live a lot.
As a rodeo, TV shows, as a rodeo rider, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Am I saying that right, rodeo rider?
Well, yeah, okay. It's fine.
Rodeo clown.
Rodeo.
Yeah, no, my dad was a rodeo clown.
No shit, what was his name? I was a clown, too.
Yeah,
I was. Oh, it was the most humiliating thing I ever did.
He was
dude.
A clown clown.
A clown
I was
clown?
A clown
yeah.
clown, and I'm not joking. I would have rather take it up the fucking poop chute from right. 10 fucking huge black guys named Tiny
uh-huh.
in man. Prison. This is how humiliating. It was brutal. Wouldn't I did it about 3 times. Man. I was afraid to be a comedian, so I somehow I hid behind the mask. And this is a true story. Most clown gigs, mm-hmm. you learn how to juggle. I'm artistic, so I know how to face paint on right. kids. I can make a flower. That's easy shit, right? And I know how to juggle. I just taught myself how to juggle as a cop, standing in the subway.
Sure, doing nothing.
With speed loaders. There's 6 bullets, like, packed into a little...
Yeah. Oh, okay.
You know what I mean?
Right.
Like, you had a... Yeah, back in the old day, you had a revolver.
It was like
and this thing was like
stuff.
A little 6 yeah. round... Something like a Old West, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so I volunteered to do the... I was in uniform for 5 years. You stood in the subway. It was brutal. Other than listening to heavy metal once a year, mm-hmm. it sucked. It smelled like piss.
Yeah, so I wanted to, yeah, that subway was horrible back then.
I wanted to go to the homeless outreach unit. You work 9 at night, 6 in the morning, weekends off, plain clothes, but it's hard to get in. It's a special unit, mm-hmm. believe it or not. The homeless outreach. We go in the tunnels and look for our clients.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I'm not joking.
Oh, wow.
And it's hard to get in because you're plain clothes. You pretty much your career is done. As soon as you go to that, as long as you don't screw up, you're never going back in uniform.
Why is that such a coveted job?
Because you're out of uniform, weekends off.
Okay.
You work 9 at night to 6 in the morning.
Okay.
So you make 10% more to do 90% less.
Oh, all right.
You sleep.
It. Yeah.
Okay, wink, wink. There's a lot of sleep.
Sure.
My nickname was Bernie. From the movie Weekend at Bernie's.
Right. Yeah.
And nobody wanted to be my partner. I thought everybody would want to be about because I'm funny and I'm jovial and I'm witty.
Right.
And I found out that no one wanted to be my, for real, nobody wanted to work with me because they called it babysitting. Because I would click in the homeless outreach van
mm-hmm.
and I would lay my head right on the, you know, it was like a Ford van
mm-hmm.
and I would, it perfectly like taut. And it would hold my head, the seatbelt. And I would sleep the whole 8 hours. Like, they would have to wake me up and say, dude, we got a call. Like, you know, there's a guy with a gun. Because
right.
most of the calls would just be an Uber for homeless people.
Right.
And that's how I kind of learned. Watch this. Most cops work in, like, 2 square miles. We could be at Coney Island. An hour later, we pick up a homeless guy in Yankee Stadium. Hour later, Shea Stadium. Mm. Hour later, Staten Island. That's not where I'm from.
That's where you're from.
How dare you? How dare you?
What do they call Staten Island people?
Oh, well, when I was in the police academy, one of my instructors always said, when people move out to the country, Staten Island.
Right.
That was his joke. It was great. Then the number one joke in Brooklyn, Queens, Staten Island is Brooklyn Recover Charge.
Right.
Then if you do a little routine, you live in Staten Island because you only got to pay one way. You only got to pay one way. It's $9 if you divvy it up. Okay. And you gas up in Jersey.
Mm-hmm.
It's the most inside joke. I don't know if you know.
Yeah.
It's the less price anywhere, and some guy's got
to
come out.
Yeah, it's illegal to,
pump your own gas in
New Jersey. It's really the only thing we did right.
Is that right?
As compared to California, you can't find a single... Like, my wife had to learn how to, you know, pump gas, and I'm surprised she hasn't set herself on fire yet.
So what do they do if you pump your gas? And write you a ticket or
something? It's, like, illegal.
You can get a fine, I think, for it. I actually worked in a gas station, so I knew how to pump gas before I got out here.
Oh, yeah.
You know who worked in a gas station in Woodmere? Ed Burns. You know Ed from Brothers
McMullen? Oh, yeah, that's right. They're Long Island guys.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Ed is a Long Island guy. We went to high school together. He's 4 years younger than me. We went to Hewlett High School.
Yeah. Remember that gig we did in Yuma?
Yeah, we did a really fun gig in Yuma.
They had those like triangular, you know, like place things on the tables with your picture on
it. Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, his face was on one side, mine was on the other. And I was like, oh, cool, I'll get to save this for memorabilia. And it said Ricky Betts.
Ah.
And I was like, oh.
Dude, better is poster. It's in my workshop. Big posters that look like they were the first time maybe in my whole life that said sponsored by Bud Light, John DeResta from 15 Minutes and Miss Congeniality and Ricky Betts from CMT. Dude, that's sucks in my it's in my workshop.
Yeah.
But can watch this. Since
I got him that CMT credit.
Yeah, you did.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah, I like that credit, too, because it's country, you know.
Absolutely. Perfect.
Yeah. So to swing back to the story we started with, Risky, I showed him around New York City, mm-hmm. and the first stop was Central Park. Central Park West, we parked my mom's car, and I just said, let's just get out, kind of walk, maybe get a hot dog. And then there was this little guy
looked just like Joe Pesci, sitting on it, reading the Daily News. Like, nobody reads the Daily News anymore, you know right. what I mean? And he had a Yankee hat on, but red with white. Like, you know, even though it was a Yankee hat, it was the wrong colors.
Okay.
And his feet barely touched the ground. He's reading the paper. He's got the coffee and the bagel. And I just looked at him, and I said, this guy's like quintessential New Yorker. And I kind of said to Risky, look at this guy. Like, that's like a New Yorker. He's probably from Brooklyn or Queens. And with that, he looks up at me, and he just fucking locks eyes with me just by chance. Yeah. And now I'm like, I was staring at you. And he goes, do I know you? And I go, actually, you do. He's Robert De Niro's best friend.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm.
You'd know him. He was Beansy in The Sopranos. Mm-hmm. He was in who's that real handsome guy? He played like a psycho, and he was an Eagles fan. Remember that? He had like a bad, what movie was that? Aaron. Eagles fan, Robert De Niro. The kid had mental damage. Silver Linings Playbook.
Yeah. Oh.
So remember that movie? He was he was in that. This guy. De Niro gets him $5,000 a week just to hang out with him. He's his friend from first grade. And he puts him in everything as a goof. Every movie he's in.
Okay.
So, and I knew him, but I couldn't think of his name. So, like, we had met each other on the set of 15 Minutes. Mm-hmm. Even one day, this little guy, years before, 19 years before, goes, I made a joke at the commissary at the movie thing, and at the set, and he goes, everyone's laughing. He goes, you must be the transit cop. He said, I am. I go, how do you know me? He goes, Bob said you were funny. So what more could you ask for
Absolutely.
Than his best friend? But now 19 years later, I'm eye-fucking him.
Right.
And I go, I know you. And he goes, yeah, how do you know me? And Risky's standing there. I go, you're friends with Bob. Like, you know what right. I mean? Like, that's the only way I couldn't think of his name.
Right.
But now I look like fucking Rupert Pupkin.
Right, right.
Like, you know, I'm trying to get to Robert De Niro now. And yeah. that's exactly the way this guy played it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I was a fucking psycho, and I'm standing him with the fucking cowboy hat.
Yeah, yeah. He totally disses him. I'm like, oh, that sucks.
And it took me a couple of days to remember what it, all I had to do was say his name, and he went in the, hey, 15, because right. before I even got to the, we met on the set of 15 Minutes, I said, you're a friend of Bob's, right? And that's when he was like, he fucking put the paper, like, he's ready to go now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Exactly the opposite effect. And then we went to Ground Zero, and then we went to Coney Island, which still, when Risky was there, was still pretty beat down.
Is Coney Island better now?
Well, watch this. Here's a secret you don't know.
Okay.
Back when I was a transit cop in the 90s, allegedly, if you've been to Coney Island, there's all these empty lots overgrown. It almost still looks like it did in the movie The Warriors,
right.
which was made, you know, 20 years ago.
This is
ago.
What we fought our way to come back to.
Yeah, exactly. I just
One
saw it the other day.
Me too.
Yeah.
With a young Mercedes Rule in there.
Is that who it is?
Yeah, the chick in the park that traps the guy. He wants, you know, like, Ajax, traps Ajax in the, you know, because he starts.
You want to know something?
What?
That guy was in my flea, you know, I sell rustic furniture at the flea market. And there's the guy from Warriors that got handcuffed to the bench.
Yeah, that's the girl. That's Mercedes.
Okay.
What's his name?
James Remar.
James Remar.
So he comes to my flea market spot one day, and he's like, hey, you make these things? I go, yeah. He's like, can you put a drawer in it? Doesn't have no drawer. I said, I can. He goes, how much? I said, about $100. $100 for a drawer? Like, all within 7 seconds.
Right, right.
And I'm like, oh, I kind of recognize that. Oh, he's the criminal in 48 hours.
Okay.
Did you know that? He's a criminal.
I never saw 48 hours.
Oh, how dare you?
I know.
He's Gans.
All right.
He's got the tank top and the muscles and the gun.
Right.
I got the money. I got everything.
All right.
He says,
it's the one comedy in the 80s I missed.
He says to Eddie Murphy, do you remember the movie? He says, I always kind of liked you, Reggie. You were kind of fun to hang out with. He's telling that to Eddie Murphy.
Right.
So anyway, he comes back around a second time, months later. How much you could make a draw? I said, dude, I know you. Are you an actor? And it was amateur hour. Are you an actor? He goes, I am. I go, well, what would I know you from? Because it was just bothering. Mm. Maybe I didn't know it was 48 hours yet. And he just goes, look it up.
Mm.
And he walked out, and I never saw him again. And I wanted to go, how can I look you up? You just, I don't know your name. So you know what I mean? That would be the first step. Disney bought up all those lots.
Okay.
How's that?
Disney bought up all the Coney Island
Coney
lots.
Island lots to make it maybe one day, you know, a big
amusement park. Right.
You know they built a baseball field there, right, since we left?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, you didn't know that? There's a AAA team that everyone comes out to see.
Yeah.
Like right on the water there.
Right.
I think Dice might have even done like an outdoor thing there.
Yeah. Aaron, what do I know about sports?
Absolutely nothing.
There you go.
No?
Zero. As a matter of this is
surfing is it, huh?
Surfing's it. This is embarrassing. My son started basketball last week. And the first time he picked up a basketball was at basketball practice.
Oh, wow.
And every other kid is like a junior fucking Magic Johnson on that team. And
he's out there dribbling with two hands.
Not even the slapping, but it's still like not even coming up to his knees kind of thing. And my wife turns to me and goes, you got to fucking step it up as a dad.
Yeah, no kidding.
Oh, God, I never thought of that.
So I went and I had to buy him a basketball the next day. And then it was one practice for a half hour, and then they had a game.
Oh, wow.
Like 3 days later. And he didn't even know, like, nobody told him, like, what the purpose of the game was. Oh. Like, why are people running up and down?
How old is he?
He's six.
Oh, yeah. That don't matter, though.
But there's, like, one kid seriously, like, pulling Meadowlark Lemon hook shots fucking midcourt and sinking them.
Yeah.
And my kid's over there's got his finger up his nose spinning around and scratching his butt.
I've been to some of those six-year-old sports games. Like, I went to a soccer game, and they're just running in every direction possible, you know. Nobody knows where to go. They're just kicking the ball off to the
That's what I thought it was going to be. But no, these fucking kids, their dads, two of the dads are coaching, you know, these guys are just, they're fucking dribbling and passing and shooting, spinning the ball on their fingertips.
Oh my God, that's funny.
I'm like, oh man. So it's like instant crash course at my house now. Like every day he gets home from camp, I'm like, let's practice dribbling.
Bad dad.
There are two things I remember about risky bets here is one, what we talked about previously was the Canoga Bowl. You can put that on vibrate. You know,
yeah,
I'm sorry about that. I just turned it back on, and there's a couple of things.
That Canoga Bowl, the first night I met Risky was my first day back doing stand up. I'd stopped doing stand up for a couple of years because I was writing for TV. I got really frustrated. My listeners know that story. And I walk in and I look at it's like 1 o'clock in the morning, and it's the Hollywood Bowl, and there's a cowboy MC, and I don't know anybody. And I'm just like, I don't know if I want to do this again, you know?
Yeah.
And then Jackie Cation walked in, and I said hi, and I'm like, all right, if Jackie's here, I can do this.
That's cool. I don't want it.
At the end of the show, Risky said, "Wow, you're really funny. For what little crowd was there, your crowd work is great." And those two things kept me going, or else I probably would not have gone back into stand-up.
That is beautiful.
There were so many really good comedians come in there. I was very blessed that I was able to do that for so long. Mm-hmm. I'd bring up 20, 30 a year, a night. And I met a lot of really cool people and learned a lot.
Man. Yeah.
Learned a lot.
That's a good way to do it.
You know, a lot of stage time. And then they had all those contests, and I would MC those contests. Uh-huh. And some of my biggest laughs were at those contests, you know, just ad-libbing and stuff.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah, I got a lot of good experience from that. So
my second favorite Risky story with me is when I brought him on Billing Ball Show where he was the cowboy expert, and we're watching his interview on tape, and it's me from Jersey, two New Yorkers, and two guys from Wisconsin. And you say, and I don't remember exact story, but you're like, you know, sometimes I'm going to do a bad Southern accent too. You know, sometimes you fall over and then your hand gets caught on the horse and you get wrapped up tighter than Jack's headband. Right? and like somebody pauses, like, who the fuck's Jack? What the fuck? And for like the next year, everything was
Dick's headband. Yeah.
It was a Dick's headband.
Yeah,
Dick's headband. Like, who the fuck's Dick?
And who is Dick? Is it an old saying?
It's just an old saying.
It's just an old saying.
Tighter than Dick's hatband, you know?
Tighter than Dick's hatband. That's it. And for a year, we would be like, where do you want to go for lunch? Let's go to that Chinese restaurant, man. It's better than Dick's headband. Like, we would just everything. Don't go in there, man. You just left the bathroom. It smells worse than Dick's headband.
It was just everything
for like a year.
That's hilarious.
Before we get out of here, we're at about an hour, right?
Yeah.
All right. You know, I got a lot. I tweeted out, ask me anything, because it's my first
back.
Oh, yeah. And I won't subject you guys to that. I'll record
that
after.
You
wanna,
okay.
You want to do? Okay. Nah, let's. I want to talk to you guys.
It might be people that really have the same thing that want to know. You know what I'm saying? I'm
still going to make fun of it. That's what we do.
You know what, Randy?
But I don't want to make it about me. I invited you guys over here. So it's you guys are the stars of my show today.
Okay.
So I don't want to subject you guys to that.
Yeah. Understood.
But now you have to tell me a road story.
Well, we did Yuma, Arizona.
Oh, right. We got
Yuma was a good one. It was the one somewhere down there by the border. We go to, I'll tell this, okay?
Yeah.
So we take this gig down near the border. Mm-hmm. I don't know. It wasn't even in a town. But you know you're in trouble when you pull up and the sign says, world's largest casino truck stop.
Okay.
We go in and there's no stage, there's nothing. Well, they did have a stage, but it's on the casino floor.
Mm-hmm. So near the cafeteria.
Yeah, yeah. So we're getting heckled
by... You should have built one.
We're getting heckled by slot machines and poker and all this stuff. And they had a little picket fence set up around the stage in the corner. And the corner had a bar on one side and a little pizza quick thing on the other side of the stage. Mm. And they had lawn chairs out front. There was like, what, 20 people out there maybe?
It was one of the worst ever. Like 15 people in lawn chairs and like people lining up to the edge of the stage for the pizza. The other people lining up for the Miller Lite.
Yeah. So on the left side of the John goes, hey, dude, just go as long as you can, you know? So it was rough. But anyway, I go up and I probably did maybe like 20 minutes at the most. I mean, it was a struggle.
Felt like 40.
Yeah, it was a struggle.
For me.
Yeah. And so John is on stage, you know, and I'm sitting on one side and that little pizza place is on the other side of the stage. And this is truckers, okay?
Sure.
And they've probably been on speed for 3 days.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
They're not in the mood for comedy, you know. And this one guy, he's standing there ordering something. And John's, he's, you know, he's having a little tough time. So he's going to the audience, you know, which was what you do.
He's the opening guy?
No, John was...
John. I thought you said John Jones. Dresden. I'm sorry.
No, Johnny.
Who's that? I don't
know. So anyway, he's going to the audience trying to just find whatever he can, you know. So he takes the mic stand. This guy is ordering a pizza over here. He's a trucker, and Johnny's he was saying something about him. He goes, hey, you got a gun? And he's using the mic stand like a, you know, like a beeper wand, you know, to see if he's got a gun. And he touches this guy's untucked shirt tail with the end of that. This guy turns around and he is so freaking mad. I remember the vein, you could see his heartbeat of the vein on his forehead, dude. And I'm like, holy shit, you know. And John, and he grabs the mic stand from John. Well, now we got a tug of war going on.
Right.
Johnny doesn't want to let go. And they're going back and forth and back and forth. And finally, the guy just gives it this big jerk. And he pulls, you know, there's two pieces. Mm-hmm. He pulls the top of the mic. Now he's got a sword. Right. Okay, so Johnny's freaking sword fighting with this guy. And then the guy turns it around and he throws it like a spear at John.
Right.
I'm like, holy shit.
Oh, man.
And Johnny, he runs all the way over to me, you know, and he goes, hey, watch this guy, watch this guy. You know, I guess he thought I was the protector then. But I thought it was over, man. But the guy just kind of like clenched his fists and just got
It was
super
almost like
red.
Almost like a Twilight Zone episode.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, now I am really mad.
Yeah. Luckily, the guy walks away, you know, and I thought I was going to have to be cowboy protector for Johnny. Right.
My favorite road story, me and Risky. We did Mesquite, Nevada.
I remember that gig.
Yeah, remember that? And watch this. Like, for 7 years, it was on the right side of the highway, and then it went to the left side.
The only thing on that highway are those two casinos.
Yep. And it was on the left side, and we drove for a really long time, and I had denim jeans on. Mm-hmm. And I said, we got to go right to the bathroom. And big denim jeans I had on, loose. And I have a very short penis. I have an innie, for real. You know what I mean? Everyone has the shtick. But, you know, I have the long balls, the short penis. I have a genital mullet at this point. And my genitals look like they were hit by a car. They just look sad. So I take like a 4.5-minute urine. And I'm like, I don't really hear it hitting the bottom of the toilet, but I'm good. You know what I mean? There was something off.
Oh, sure. This is so weird.
I step back. I look down. And from the top of my pants all the way down to my feet is urine. Completely soaked like a homeless piece of shit.
And it didn't look like he got it on himself washing his hands.
Oh,
it looked like he pissed his pants. You know?
And I had to walk.
And he did.
And it was just funny. I had to go from there to the car. And he was just walking alongside. And he just like, you know, like every 15th person would kind of notice it out of the corner of their eye. But
I'd forgotten about that.
You gotta own that when you walk it. You can't because you can tell a spilt milkshake on your lap from you peeing your pants as an adult. There's no.
And the one other one we did Yuma, and it was the first time ever I saw the Mexican. Everyone's worried about a wall. There is a wall.
Yeah,
so
there is
Risky
a wall,
drove along
it's
the wall.
It's called the Border Fence Act of 2006.
He drove along the
Hillary
wall.
Hillary Clinton and Obama voted for.
Did they? Yeah.
Then we drove through a town called Brawley. Yeah. And I think Risky said on stage at Yuma that the town was black and white. One of us said it looked like it was in black and white or a ghost town, and it got a huge laugh.
Yeah.
And then this is the one funny thing. This was a new club. This was like, you know, someone opened up in a sports bar a Friday, right, Saturday, yeah, comedy club.
Good paid, club, though. Really
good club. And but this is, they were so naive, they rented like a $5,000 Adobe home, filled the fridge with beer, Jack Daniels. Nice. Like, they had no idea that comedians were going to come in and steal everything, jerk off on the carpet,
right,
steal the Bible. Yeah. You know, download kiddie porn.
Right.
You know what I mean? Until someone gets arrested at the club. And it was just a really fun kind of two nights. And he had killed so bad on one night that they thought the show was over.
Oh.
I never saw that before, you know, or almost anyone. He just killed so bad that they kind of gave him a half-ass.
First time I got a standing ovation in the middle, you know.
Wow.
Yeah, for one joke I'd done about French women's pussies or something, you know.
However, can I
military
tell?
Base,
hold on.
Yeah.
You know what the yin and the yang of that is? Redondo Beach Christmas party.
Oh my gosh!
5 minutes of dead silence. Hold on. Not just dead silence. Hold on.
Horrible.
Not just dead silence. Then he goes to some joke where he don't eat the back of a what do you call those panties?
Oh,
you know the ones that go up the ass, a thong.
Yeah, thong.
It tastes like shit.
Yeah.
And I knew it was coming. He was like, he was stuck in his act.
I was hung up, and I couldn't go to the audience.
He didn't know where to go, and he stuck with that. And he said, "Don't eat the back of that string. Tastes like shit." And like, you just saw like 65. Hold on. Then they start doing this, like.
Yeah.
One other story like that.
So bad, man.
That's all right.
One of those you walk out, and the people, when you walk out, they just fold their arms and do this. You know?
Yeah.
And
they don't even look at you.
Give you that look. They hate you right away.
It's one of those where you leave and you think about going back to school.
Yeah, exactly.
Becoming an accountant.
Yeah.
That was a rough one. And then one other one. This is just a weird one. I stopped in a comedy club on Route 303, Holiday Inn, Route 303. I think it was like Pat Cooper. Or like one of these New York guys that's been around 100 years, like on a weeknight in a hotel. It was packed, and I was going to work as a cop. So I said, fuck, let me just stop in and just see what's going on. And there was a guy on stage named Dave Goldstein, and it was about 300 elderly people there to see Pat Cooper or one of those old-time guys. And this is exactly what the guy says, and he's bombing. He can't get their attention. And he goes, wow, not only is this a horrible show, George Burns died today.
Oh, God.
And he had died like at 4:30, so none of these people knew.
Oh, man.
So now you had like 400 old people go,
oh, yeah.
And all 400 break off to talk to each other about their favorite George Burns story.
Right, absolutely.
And the owner of the club grabbed me and goes, give him a note and tell him you're coming on. And then you introduce Pat Cooper when you get them back. And it was funny. I had to hand him a note, and I just said, get off and bring up John DeResta.
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah.
Hey, guys.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, my friend.
So much, man.
I'm glad your heart is okay.
My pleasure.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
My pleasure, man.
It's been a while that I wanted both of you. I wanted you on and I couldn't find the right fit. And then John and I have been going back and forth for about 2 years on doing this. And I'm like, what about Risky? He's like, perfect. Oh, John DeResta, where can we find you?
I have a funny Instagram, at John DeResta, JohnDiResta. I'm on Facebook. I'm not the plumber from Long Island, and I'm not the guy that fixes video machines in Staten Island. Those are two John DeRestas.
Risky, where can we find you?
I got my website, riskybets.com, Facebook, Instagram, all that stuff.
Awesome.
Everything's Risky Bets. You can Google me and find me and dates and all that stuff.
All right, excellent. I want to thank you guys. It's good to be back. It's good to be back at the All Things Comedy Studio. It's good to be back. See Aaron, buddy. He came to visit me. I don't know if we talked about that after my surgery.
Well, we are glad you're back.
Oh, thanks, man.
Yeah.
So happy that everything
came
out
all right.
How old are
you? 46.
Okay, nice.
So I got a few years shy of 50. Well, thanks, guys. I'm
maybe
glad
we
this
could
is great.
We could turn this into a tour, like, you know, one and two. I would like to. I don't know. You know what happens with these tours? I think you have to be famous. You know, I think the shtick that I'm from New York and he's a country... Uh-huh. Like, I'm a little bit cunty,
right.
And he's a little bit eat my hole.
Right. That didn't sell?
But you know
we're
what I mean?
We're a good contrast. I'm clean, and he's...
That's what I like.
It's great teamwork, but I'm saying I would love for someone to hear this. Out of the 17 people that listen, do any of them promote... Can anyone put us on the road?
14 after that eat my whole joke.
No kidding.
Yeah.
I am at Murray V on Twitter. Okay. I'm the only Murray Valeriano on the internet, so don't worry about it. Murray V Comedy on Instagram. Come see these guys when they come to your town. Very funny. Thanks for listening.
Thank you, Murray.
Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Bye.
life on the road. It's
booze, tacos, angry dwarves, strippers waving guns,
and
fees, fights, canceled flights, running with the runs,
and
blacklists, bounce checks, great, a bachelorette. Trunks in the front, making out through your set.
And
middle acts doing blow more, missing merch.
And
drive the rental car past another mega church.
And
juice, keys, vagina, fist, your cell phone is gone. One big Law and Order marathon.